Welcome to the Mill Creek View, Tennessee podcast with your host, Steve Abramowitz, editor-in-chief of the Mill Creek View newspaper.
Welcome to the Mill Creek View, Tennessee podcast. We're focusing on the volunteer state with always an interesting person making a positive change in our community. This time, special guest, Kathy Harms. But first, for more information about the Mill Creek View podcast, visit us anywhere you get your podcasts and socials at Mill Creek View, Tennessee. While you're there, please subscribe. Welcome to our People in the News episode, where I interview people who are making an impact and are lovers of truth. Today, we are talking with Kathy Harms. As seen in the TennesseeConservativeNews.com, working alongside of statisticians, IT specialists, cybersecurity experts, and legislators, Kathy Harms has discovered that despite good intentions, the current voting system in Tennessee contains significant vulnerabilities. Kathy and those she works with believe that elections are for the people, not the state, nor special interest, and that elections should be fair and transparent. Kathy says those in charge of these processes need to be reminded that the vote belongs to the people. Kathy joins me today to discuss election integrity specifically as it pertains to the volunteer state. Kathy has provided an election integrity petition that concerned Tennessee voters can fill out and send into legislators. As a citizen of the state of Tennessee, I believe that our state must take the highest standards to ensure that only eligible voters participate in our elections, accuracy is valued above convenience, transparency protects the purity of the ballot. As a result, I, the undersigned, do not consent to the use of electronic voting systems to cast and tabulate my vote and petition my county to return or maintain precinct voting as ordered in Article 1, Section 5, and Article 4, Section 1, Tennessee State Constitution. Use only currency grade, controlled numbered, hand marked paper ballots to authenticate the ballot. Article 4, Section 1. Return or maintain precinct counting using a hand count with all ballots available online for public view / audit. All right. Kathy, how are you today?
I'm great. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. Thanks for coming on. You're doing a lot of hard work for us. You've been here 10 to 11 years. Did you see election irregularities where you came from, and where was that?
Well, we lived about 20 years in Massachusetts. We were originally from the Midwest. And, you know, election integrity was really not on a lot of people's radar screens in those days. I would say that after 2020, everything exploded. And when it exploded, we really were just trying to get an understanding of what did happen, what do we do, and how do we do it. And in doing that, we started out thinking we could mitigate a lot of the issues that and concerns people had by trying to come back to the machines and try to fix them, so to speak. But the more we got into it, the more we realized that was a fool's errand for us, because there would be no way we could ever in exact times, no matter when you thought that you might be secure, that it could stay secure because of the way the machines are operating and how they are purchased, how they are established, what the procedures are and what the rules are by the vendors.
Mm. So I have you quoted here as saying those in charge of these processes need to be reminded that the vote belongs to the people. How have they changed things to move it away from one vote? It's counted, add them up, all up, and certify a winner. What have they done to voting day in Tennessee?
Well, first of all, we've coined a new phrase with voting. It's called convenience. And we believe convenience has sacrificed the accuracy of our systems. And let me explain that a little bit. In Tennessee, it's not just that we have early voting. We have convenience centers to vote in now. We don't vote in the precincts as in a lot of the counties. We're moving further and further down the road. And we feel that Tennessee has put the pedal to the metal to purchase the kind of equipment by the vendors that would make us as insecure as Arizona, Pennsylvania, Georgia, Michigan, all the states that we watched having problems. We were always told after 2020 that the real problem was the mail-in ballot. And since we do not do mail-in voting, there are a few things we do very, very well in this state. Let me tell you, we do a very strict job of vetting the absentee ballot, and it is now watermarked thanks to Senator Joey Hensley and Representative Bruce Griffey last year. And second of all, we do voter ID, which a lot of states do not do. So there are some things we do well, but because we don't have mail-in voting, didn't mean we didn't have a problem. And I would I would posit to you today that the elections in this last November in Arizona proved out and vindicated us that all of the problems that we've been indicating would happen have happened. You cannot, when you're voting in a vote center, it's not predictable. You don't know how many people are going to show up. So what do you get? We got what we got here in Williamson County, long lines. What happens when you don't know how many people are going to show up? You can run out of supplies. They ran out of ink and printers in Maricopa County. They ran out of paper in Maricopa County. And the ballot not being secure, not having any markings of any kind on it, it's a blank piece of paper for ES&S, just blank, that you put into this machine. There's no way to secure the reality that the vote that was cast is actually the vote that was counted, because we all saw in 2020 in Arizona, when we saw ballots coming out in suitcases from underneath a table and being, you know, you can, you know, replace ballots with other ballots. So we feel that what happened in Arizona did vindicate us. We do believe that we can see the problems that have materialized, that we have been warning about. And we are concerned because last year legislation was passed in Tennessee to advance the purchase of the kinds of equipment that we have in Williamson County that have problems.
I see your petition has about 4,300 signatures right now. How many is your goal, or do you need to get, how many is your goal to get on the, or how many do you need to get on the ballot, and how much traction is your petition getting? Like 4,300, is that a great number, high number? Do we have a lot of time to triple that, quadruple that? And are you getting any resistance?
Well, I'll tell you two things. There's two parts to that. No, we're not happy with the number. The more the merrier. Come to the party. This is not a petition that can get us on a referendum. We don't have that opportunity. This is a petition to bring to our legislators to say the grassroots are concerned. I do not think that the amount of people on that petition are reflective of the amount of people that are calling me. I have spoken literally to thousands of people in this state. Not because I've asked, but because I have been asked, because people are concerned. So I don't know that it's reflective. I don't know if it's shadow banned. I don't know what it is. But there is also the, if you go through the petition, there are some questions. So we are trying our best to put out some fact sheets. Number one is a lot of people are concerned. We have two we are basing this petition off of our state constitution, which Tennessee has one of the best constitutions in the country, but it's largely ignored when it comes to elections. And let me tell you why. When you go to vote centers and you're not voting in your precinct, you're collecting a bunch of ballots from all across the county instead of your specific precinct. So now you're mixing things up. That affects the purity of the ballot box. You're moving these bins all over the place. That affects the purity of the ballot box. We know for a fact that these machines we've been told are vulnerable just at the point of the ballot marking device, if you use one, of changing the voter's intent. So even if you did 100% hand count recount of that paper, because the big push that's being sold to us is this is a verifiable voter paper trail. All right, the paper's there. Well, if you're voting on a ballot marking device and you think you're voting for Jonathan, and then you come out of the ballot and the ballot comes out and you just walk it over to the tabulator and you don't look at it, the other guy can be on there. Okay. And it happens. And J. Alex Halderman from the University of Michigan found this out because he was he's a cybersecurity kind of guy, and he's involved in a lawsuit in Georgia. And he gave these findings that he came out with to the Department of Homeland Security and CISA. For a year, they ignored them. He said, nobody in the country should be using these ballot marking devices. Well, CISA, after a year, and Tennessee was one of the 16 states that were identified, sent out a memorandum basically saying, well, come up with a patch, come up with a fix. Well, that is not good enough for us. But people are asking on the petition, why do you have these points? For instance, let's go to the tough one, Election Day. A lot of people complain that we have up to 20 days to vote in any election, early voting, they call it. Well, that sounds great for quote unquote convenience until you realize you have 20 days of ballots that are put through a tabulator. And the moment they enter the tabulator, and we've documented this through the head of ES&S's chief of security, the moment you put your ballot into a tabulator, It is counted. It's counted onto a memory card. That is a vulnerability. In essence, we're really counting a ballot before the polls close. Even though the ballot then goes into a locked bin, the data, we're concerned that data being stored on a memory card is not secure. So that's 20 days of that, right? Second of all, you have 20 days of what we call concerns of cyber stalking of our voters, because our voter rolls can be purchased during voting and they know who's voted, they know who hasn't voted, and there can be a lot of mischief that happens with our voter rolls that I won't even go down that road. But why Election Day? Because our state constitution is very clear that we are to vote on a specified day in November and not the day after. There's a second sentence that says, and it ceases that day. So we can never have the Pennsylvania situation where they've got people coming in after Election Day with ballots. So we're saying, if we have a constitution that talks about Election Day, where did early voting come from? It came out of, my understanding is one of the first states was back in the early 2000s was Florida, after the Florida debacle of 2000. However, we don't have a category for early voting. So technically, every single vote that happens before Election Day is counted as an early vote, absentee, not early vote, absentee. So we put in our Tennessee code a whole set of procedures of how to handle early voting under the code of absentee. Well, these aren't really absentee ballots. Absentee, we have a separate, a very good, as I told you, system for that. So they had to create a way around it. So they call them absentee. When we have a constitution, we have to think of the actual absolute genius of those who put that constitution together. Not that they could foresee what we're doing with early voting, but they put it there for a reason. And I say, if in 1879 they could make it to the ballot box on Election Day to the polls, we can make it today in 2023.
The second question. There's a county that in November had less than 4% turnout. I don't know if that's because there was nobody to challenge somebody, so it was just a foregone conclusion, but apathy was pretty high. And what I think you're asking for is a constitutional amendment, right? That would be the fifth in 2 years. People are expected to understand a lot.
It's in our constitution now. We're just not living by it.
Ah, okay.
It's so already there.
The rules that are already there.
Yeah. We're not following the rules, right? The second
you must be over the target to make them act like Antifa or something, right? I mean, you were doxxed at a mock trial to dispute your issues by a commissioner, Bob Brown, weren't you? Or did I have this wrong?
He disputed my last an interview I had done, sort of a mock trial, trying to dispute the findings that we had. Although the people that were in the audience without me there, I was really blessed that they vouched for me that I didn't say certain things and I had the facts and command of the facts. But when we have a constitution that says Election Day, let's use it. The second really interesting piece of our state constitution that's already in the constitution talks about where you vote. It makes it clear that the General Assembly has the right to make legislation for people to vote where? In the precincts where they reside. A vote center is not a precinct where you reside. And when you have precincts, you have more places to vote. We had 43 precincts in Williamson County, and we went to 25 vote centers. Does that sound to you like it's fair and equal access to the ballot box?
I'm well aware of what they're doing. They're dispersing
it. Yes, it can be very subjective where those vote centers end up. And I don't ever have to ever, and I never would accuse people of, you know, fraud or anything like that. But the fact remains, it's a subjective decision by the Election Commission. And the Election Commission is not elected. Nobody that does our elections is elected. The Secretary of State's not elected. The Coordinator of Elections isn't elected.
Did you ever get a response from Election Commission Chairperson Duda or Secretary of State Trey Haggart?
Well, I've met with Trey Haggart several times. He's a great guy. Really like him. We feel we have a solution to the problems without going down the rabbit hole of what all the electronic issues are. It is simple. We go back to the way we did it in the past. We go back to the way Maine does it. We go back to the way New Hampshire does it. A pen, a secure paper ballot, and I'm talking serialized so that when you're in a precinct, You have a finite number of ballots before the election even takes place, and those are the same ballots that have to be inventoried at the end. You put them in a box, and you leave them there until the polls closed, and then you have a count. We have it. It's already in our TCA code how to do a count, and I was part of a recount in Williamson County in 2021. It's a great system. Yeah. So what's the
problem? They do it for high school elections every year. President, Vice President, Treasurer. It's not a big deal. We should be able to do this very simply. And if it's by county as opposed to by state, the numbers aren't as huge. You could do it in 2 hours.
If it's by precinct, the precincts are smaller than the county. Then you just add up all the precincts.
Especially in some of the counties here in Tennessee. So, okay. So there's two new pieces of legislation to remedy outdated voter rolls. Are there a lot of moved out of state and dead or non-citizen people still on the rolls?
Well, it was a concern last year for non-citizens because non-citizens we found were being called up for jury duty. And there wasn't a rule that said that they had to contact the election commission to tell them that they were called up. So we wanted to close that loophole. It was great legislation that Senator Hensley put forward last year, but there was still a word that had to be modified. So that's one piece of legislation. The other is there is no mandate now for like the date of death. Not that it doesn't, they don't put it on, but it's not mandated. So if the date of death is missing, you had an absentee ballot, when did the guy die? Did he die, you know, before he mailed the ballot in? Or after the you got the ballot? So those are just cleanups. And those are only two very, very, very small areas that we're looking at because voter rolls, I work with groups from across the country, the Virginia Institute, the Election Integrity Network, the Foundation for Government Accountability. These are all great organizations. And they have done a lot of research for us. And they have told us what they found and what to look for. For instance, we have to protect our voter rolls and look at who's active, who's inactive, who went from inactive to active during an election. Are we tracking that? Second thing is the nefarious, you've heard of the Zuckerbucks?
Oh, yeah.
That came in. Well, we're finding that they have a new little scam going on where they're trying to get into the election commission and get your voter roll data. And they don't want just your voter roll data for elections. They are data mining that they can use this kind of data for ESG, and which is the social credit system. So we want to protect and close the loopholes or guard against. Just we did pass legislation against Zuckbucks here in Tennessee last year, but just we are being warned just because you pass that, this snake always grows another head.
They'll figure out a way. Yeah.
You have to be aware.
So we had an experiment in democracy 2 months back in November, and we saw several Tennessee counties having trouble, as you said, printing ballots. Knox County ran out of ink. Only one registration table, so 2 hour waits, open Wi-Fi connections at polling places, which is outrageous. All the things you've warned about, but Heritage.org gave us the number one rating of the 50 states, even though it was an 85, which kind of makes it a B, which means there's plenty of ways to go better. And some of the categories we were 0 out of 3, 0 out of 6. So it's not perfect, but it is actually embarrassing, isn't it? Didn't they just coin it the Tennessee error of all things?
Well, let's talk about Heritage. Heritage is a great organization, Heritage Action for America. And when they did that scorecard, and I did talk to Hans von Spakovsky, who actually put that together, and he recognizes that the data that he was scoring us on had nothing to do with the machines. It has nothing to do with the electronics. If you read it, it's like it's the things we do well. We do well with absentee ballots. We do well with the voter ID. But it stayed away from all the electronic issues that we talk about. And so it was very, it's very misleading. And it's like if you went, we wrote an op-ed and actually the Tennessee Conservative published it, kind of looking at it and saying, it's like if you just check your pulse when you go to the doctor, but you've got splitting headaches, you might not find that you've got a brain tumor. You can't just look in one area. You have to look at everything. And Hans is great. He's a great guy. But remember, the year before we got number one, Georgia was number one. And we all know how Georgia turned out in 2020.
It doesn't take much to slip. You're right. So I'm looking at counties here. So DeKalb County and Hamilton County voters said that polling places were using Dominion voting machines and that the site had an open Wi-Fi connection, which is illegal. All you do to is just open up a Wi-Fi setting on your cell phone and you can see the available Wi-Fi network. So that's not hard to catch. Guess my question is, Why are there 30-something machine companies in Tennessee when most states have one or two, Dominion being the most popular or infamous of the names out there? But we use ES&S mostly, but it isn't the only one. Why? Well, why so many?
Well, we only have five right now, and ES&S, Dominion, and Microvote are the top three, I would say. And Dominion, we had in Williamson County. Yours is ballot on, the Hamilton was ballot on demand. Ours was not. Ours was a ballot marking device. And the problem that was found to have occurred in Williamson County affected both the ballot marking device that nobody's talking about, which goes back to the integrity of the voter's intent, and the counter, the tabulator. What the solution was, just throw it away. We'll just bring in something else. Well, that's not going to solve the problem, because all of these machines inherently have one simple problem. They're all electronics with proprietary software that nobody knows what's inside those machines. And when you talk about internet, by law, we're not supposed to be able to access internet. They're not supposed to have capabilities in these machines, but nobody has access to go inside of these machines and crack them open and find out. And the kind of a chip that can be in these can be as small as the tip of a pencil. And every cybersecurity expert will tell you that the firmware that's in most of these machines, the chips, they're all being manufactured in Asia. And a lot of the Asian companies manufacture them where? Actually, in China, under the watchful eye of the CCP. It's pretty crazy that we're using machines that are manufactured or have parts that come from China. It's
Don't our voter tallies go to Indiana? We don't even have control of that. And if something were to happen to the Indiana, we would have absolutely no way of knowing if our numbers were right or not.
Well, see, that's the whole spaghetti of what could happen. I'm trying to just really deal directly with what we have seen. And what we saw in Williamson County with Dominion was very, very serious, because the voter intent, we don't know. We don't know why one ballot type was worse than the others. We don't know a lot of really what happened. We just came out with a report 4 months after the election, jettisoned Dominion and brought in ES&S. And when you talk about the internet, like I said, you don't know what's inside that machine. You don't know who programmed it. We're not programming our elections. The vendor is programming our elections. When an administrator says, oh, no, I program it, what they're saying is they take the USB and they put it in to the machine. That's not programming. They're not writing the software. They're not writing the hardware. They don't know what the firmware is. None of us know this, and we're flying blind. Who flies blind with my vote? I don't want to fly blind. I want it quantified that there was a paper trail, a chain of custody, and it was counted.
Absolutely, yeah. It's so simple. You created an election integrity petition. We talked about that. That concerned Tennessee voters can fill out and send into legislators. What legislators, A, are backing you, and what would it do if the lawmakers pushed it forward?
Well, if the lawmakers pushed it forward, I'm hoping where they would go would be to where we've been asking them for 2 years. We were blessed to meet Representative Mark Fincham from Arizona, who ran for Secretary of State there. And he gave us the ballot from a company in Dallas called Authentics. It's a secure ballot where we would hope that if they would really listen to us, that we would get a secure ballot, not just a piece of paper, that it would be hand marked and that we would go to the count of hand count by precinct. Their hair starts on fire when you talk about this, because they're so used to these vote centers. And in one county, you can have 60 different ballots, but most precincts only have one type, because you have different districts. And if you break it back into the precinct, you're controllable. You're voting on election day, so nobody can abscond with your vote or cyber stalk you or anything else for your vote. And we would actually be living the life that we say we live as a constitutional republic. You and I had a brief discussion about four constitutional amendments that got put through last year. There's another one on the ballot up for legislation this year. If we think that the Constitution is so important that we are willing to amend it, why aren't we even enforcing what's in there? We have this in our state constitution. We have some great new legislators. We have a great freshman class that came in this year. A lot of new faces, very strong constitutionalists. We have some great heroes that have been there that are great constitutionalists. We are putting legislation together to go to get rid of the vote centers back to precincts. We have legislation for the ballot, and we're hoping that there will be legislation for Election Day. So those are the three key points that
That's
we're
a great
hoping.
Segue to my next question. So Tennessee Voters for Election Integrity said that maybe that's because a lot of election integrity bills submitted to the 2022 General Assembly never made it out of subcommittees. The group highlighted several bills that died in subcommittees, HB 2074, which would have given citizens the option for hand-marked ballots with security markings. That's what you want. HB 2305, which would have established a state crime team to help local law enforcement catch and punish those who violate election rules. Sounds reasonable. HB 2011, which would have filled an accountability gap by establishing a formal process in which a citizen could file a complaint with the state election commission alleging malfeasance or neglect of duty by a member of the state election commission or a county election commissioner. Those all failed. Senate Leader Jack Johnson, House Speaker Cameron Sexton, Governor Bill Lee, all Republicans, 75 out of 99 representatives have. I'm just wondering where the support for the leaders that are Republican are. If we're going to lead the country as Republican red state, why aren't they 100% behind you? And do they act like Republicans or do they not on election integrity?
Well, to your point, I do get a lot of pushback from those very leaders that you would think would be on the forefront of this. It is mind-boggling that they are pushing back on this. There is no really good logical reason to push back on it, especially since our Constitution is telling us that we should be voting in precincts and on Election Day. And they use this excuse a lot called human error. Well, Kathy, do you know the human error? If we went to a hand-marked ballot, do you know how many people make mistakes? Well, a lot of people on a hand-marked ballot today are where? They're in their house. They're the elderly that are doing that. If you make a mistake and you eliminate the lines on Election Day, because you could put 100 of those little cardboard dividers and have people be voting at the same time and then just depositing their vote in a box. And if they make a mistake, when you tile your floors, you account for the mistake, right? The cracked tile, you have excess. When you order these ballots, you have enough to account for that. You give the person a new ballot. That's not that hard. And we are not ignorant people. I think it's pretty insulting to say that Tennesseans are too ignorant to correctly fill out a ballot. But let's go to human error and let's really talk about that. We had human error in October 2021 in Williamson County. We just had human error in Davidson County, where over 3,000 people got the wrong ballot. Human error, that was what it's chalked up to. Monmouth, New Jersey, just had a problem with the SNS machines. They found out about it, was it 2 months later? They're turning over an election. For what? For human error. Okay, human error, when it comes to a pencil, a paper, a counting table, it stays there. It doesn't travel all through the county, and it cannot travel for thousands of miles into other machines. The problem we had in Williamson County, that was human error. That problem was found in 64 out of 65 counties in Georgia. It was not even limited to the state of Tennessee. There are other states. When you have a human error using electronics, number one, it's hard to find because nobody understands. Nobody can read this stuff. By the time it is found, it could do incredible damage, and we are very reticent to go back and turn over an election. And number three, nobody not having any control over that makes it much more dangerous to have a human error when it comes to a machine than a human error at a counting table. And when you count these ballots, the process in Tennessee is you have four people sitting there, two Republicans, two Democrats, to call it out, to count it. And it's a pretty good system that can be, that's a check and balance. When you have machines that nobody, I don't read code. I barely can operate my laptop, but I'm the typical voter. I shouldn't have to know all the bells and whistles. I don't read software code. My election commissioners don't read software code.
And I think it's dramatically cheaper, as a matter of fact, to have humans, four people at a table, than it is with these machines. Hawkins County was all computerized. Montgomery County said they had machines with electronics and pushing a red button. No paper, no way to know if they jimmy-rigged the vote or not. Let's hope not. Blount County has 135,000 residents, for example. If half are voters, we could hand count 70,000 voters in about an hour with a Vegas money counting machine. Why are we mucking up the works with expensive machines? I mean, Blount is 228 years old, and not to pick on them, but this didn't seem to be much of a problem until now. They voted for Goldwater and Reagan, so maybe this is our punishment.
Well, we've accelerated machines across the country. I'm hoping that we can reverse that in the state of Tennessee. There are states and there are municipalities and other states that are trying to pull this back in. This is not a Tennessee-only concern. I told you I'm on these calls all day long, all across the country, and we will be having an event here on March 11th. You don't have to take this from me. We're going to be bringing in some real experts. We're going to be bringing in Garland Favorito from Georgia. He's done this for 17 or 18 years. He's not paid. He understands a lot of this. We're going to be bringing in Clay Parikh. He is a DOD. He's from the DOD. He used to actually be one of the guys that would say, do the inspection on the machines before they could go off and be sold. So he was one of those guys. And he's going to tell us how terribly vulnerable these machines are. And then there is Representative Mark Fincham. He's coming back. We're very excited to have him back, and a few others. And one of our very own, we are very proud of, Benny Smith from Shelby County. He's on the Election Commission. And just to prove that this is a nonpartisan issue, Benny is a Democrat. This is not a Republican or a Democrat issue. This shouldn't matter. It's bipartisan.
But, you know, it's also another interesting issue, and we've had a lot of shows about this. They say the solution to all this chaos is to federalize our elections, also known as centralize, aka putting the power in few hands. I think that's a very bad idea. You know, like Stalin said, it's not the people who vote that count, it's the people who count the votes. To defuse the power of voting has always been a state administrative event. How is the federal government taking over, and how do we stop it?
Well, the federal government under Obama designated election equipment as critical infrastructure, and that was a problem. After the election in 2000 in Florida, they passed the Help America Vote Act, which forced every state to have a statewide voter database, which made those vulnerable. They put in some regulations. However, there are many things we do not have to adopt that the federal government tells us. We can take those things back. We do not have to acquiesce. The United States Constitution is very clear that elections are administered by the states. It's about us not giving up our rights. Now, we have a great guy in our federal government, one of our own from the state of Tennessee, Representative Mark Green, who is now the chairman of the Department of Homeland Security and CISA, which is Cybersecurity Infrastructure Agency. And that's where this kind of settles down, is with them. And a lot of the Twitter files that came out about CISA, and he, I believe, will be working on this. He's very, very concerned. So good. We are grateful for him.
Good. I'm trying to get him on the show. As a matter of fact, let me read this headline to you and a little bit of the article, and let's hear what you have to say about it, since you are so involved in election integrity issues. Middle Tennessee officials, FBI set plans to handle election fraud, voting rights concerns, November 2nd, 2020. A team has been appointed to oversee complaints of election fraud and voting rights concerns in Middle Tennessee to work with the United States Justice Department's nationwide Election Day program for the November 3rd general election. That was 2020. Whatever came of that?
You know, that's a new story I have not heard. That I will dig deep into and get you a written response to, because I have not heard that. Okay. But why would we want the federal government involved with anything? You know, Ron DeSantis has done a pretty good job in Florida of getting his own team together. He has his own election crime unit, so that if there's anything that goes on in that state, you mentioned one of the pieces of legislation we didn't get passed would have given us something like that. We have no standing. What do we do if there is a problem?
And that was 2020. right before the Trump-Biden election, the newest headline was FBI U.S. attorneys will monitor Election Day complaints November 3rd, 2022. Assistant U.S. Attorney Generals, along with the Federal Bureau of Investigation, will be monitoring Tennessee's Election Day activities and handling any complaints that may arise. Did they ever take your complaints and do anything with them?
No, that's a well-kept secret because I have never even heard of it.
I took those right out of the Tennessean headline. So they tried to tell people, but it seems to me like the feds are here doing what they always do. What support have you gotten in Nashville and in the county specifically? Is there any counties that are more adhering to you and following your rules and pushing forward county legislations, or is everybody just waiting to see what they do and Governor Lee and the rest of them?
Well, we started a state coalition under the auspice, under the heading of the, you've heard of probably Russ Vought, Center for Renewing America. He was very involved with the Patriot 20 up there with Kevin McCarthy. He also has a group right here in Tennessee, Citizens for Renewing America. And we've all hooked up with that and with the Election Integrity Network, which is Cleta Mitchell and the Virginia Institute. And so through that, we have been able to grow our coalition to roughly 40 counties that are on a call every Friday. These are citizens that have developed their own election integrity areas in their county. So that's for roughly 40 counties. So there is a huge interest for this across the state. In as far as an individual county, Maury County has done the hardest work to push to get the hand-marked paper ballot. What we're trying to overcome is some of the TCA code that is old code and code that has forced us into the machines. So that's one of the pieces of legislation. Actually, it just was finalized this week. We'll go to the paper ballot and change that TCA code to allow us to be able to get there. Because we're running up, it's like a ceiling. They might want to do it, but they don't have the authority to do it. Even with the election commission at the county level, they have to adhere to whatever the state code is. And so we're trying to remove the obstacles. And we're not saying force everybody to do this, but at least let the counties have an opportunity to do it. And yeah. We also have some counties like Williamson County, where the county commissioners, this is going to blow your mind. Nobody in a county in the election commission is accountable to anybody in the county. If you're on the county election commission, your reporting is to the state. There is no relationship to the voter that you're responsible to. You're not responsible to the mayor, the county commission. The only thing that happens dotted line is when they want money. Then they walk over to the county commission and they ask for the money. So right now, for instance, Williamson County, our election commission wants money. They want to buy more machines. So they've walked over to the county commission who's reviewing that, and we're fighting that at the county commission level, saying we don't want you to give them the money, and that's our only leverage
for sure. And just like in DC, where we have big government, big military, big pharma, big agriculture, big, there is a big vote company lobby up there in Nashville, and lobbyists spend upwards of $500,000 per legislature in the capital. Are Dominion and ES&S big bourbon and steak dinner buyers up there? And are they succeeding against a little fish like you and I? Or are they, like I said, are you seeing the legislators saying, no, voter integrity is a huge Republican issue and we're going to lead the country in it?
Well, they're not saying it's a huge Republican issue and we're going to lead the country in it. That's one of the reasons I went to see Trey Hargett, who's appointed by the legislature, which is a little odd in a lot of states that they are actually elected. And I can go talk to the legislators. They make one phone call to Trey Hargett and everything is shut down. And that's a problem. They're not responsive. We have some really great legislators, and I won't call them out, but I won't deny the fact that we have some great, great men and women up there, but we have far more that are okay with the status quo, who honestly do not understand what's going on. They have more questions. I know more about it, and some of the people that are working on this in other counties know more. And it's not their fault. They can't know everything. They are a part-time legislature, but they need to give it some serious consideration, because nobody wants to be the captain of the Titanic. And if we continue down this road, we're going off the same cliff that Arizona is on.
Well, that would be bad. We're probably coming down to the end here. I just want to run a couple of things by you. We've got 5 minutes, as a matter of fact. So we've actually become famous or infamous. I mentioned it earlier, but I want to get to the bottom of it now for voting problems. Tennessee error. The Tennessee error is, by the dictionary standard, is an anomaly discovered on Dominion's image cast precinct, ICP tabulators, also referred to as scanners, that occurred during a Williamson County election held on October 26, 2021. I don't know why they don't call it a Dominion error, but it's a Tennessee error. Open records requests reveal 64 of 66 Georgia counties have the same unresolved Tennessee error, sounds like should be in Georgia error, that caused seven scanners to miscount hundreds of ballots in Williamson County. Sounds like that's something we should never have happen again, but they want to buy these tabulators instead of lease them. We had Frank Limpus on here the other day talking about exactly that, trying to prevent us from just shelling out and owning these error-prone machines. Why wouldn't we have success not doing that, at least not with Dominion, if they are proven to be a problem like that?
Well, there's another dirty little secret. You brought up the ICP, that's the tabulator, but that wasn't the only problem. They used code on the when the Secretary of State gave us his report. The ICX is the ballot marking device, which produces the paper that goes into the tabulator. If the tabulator was reading something wrong, it was being produced someplace before it got there, right? That's just logic. Well, it did. It was coming out of the ballot marking device. We're not talking enough about that because that's voter intent. If there was something that was going wrong in that ballot marking device, that's where the ballot's being produced, that you think when you're at home and you hit print on your laptop, you think, you know, your printer's going to print that. The problem is when you hit print on a ballot marking device, it may not print that. And something was happening in the ballot marking device, either with the QR code or with the actual name. And we don't know what it was. It was tested. Why we're doing this, we over and over again buying the same type of equipment with ESNS, which is almost all, these are so incestuous, the technology between these companies. It's crazy. And we don't understand why we're not getting more traction.
So this was kind of crazy. Campaign finance officials offered little sympathy Wednesday to a Tennessee Republican lawmaker who said he was unable to complete a recent election finance report due to the FBI confiscating all his campaign files. Newly sworn in Republican Rep. Todd Warner was one of several state lawmakers whose homes and legislative offices were searched by federal agents earlier this year. Warner eventually sent an email to the Tennessee Bureau of Ethics and Campaign Finance Ethics Commission, I'm glad we have one, that he could not complete his most recent campaign finance reports because he did not have access to key documents. Warner's case was deferred to the Registry of Election Finance Board, which disagreed with Warner's argument during a meeting Wednesday. You don't get a pass just because the FBI raided your stuff. So even if you want to comply with the rules they make, it's darn near impossible. What do you make of all that?
Well, that is based on a whole different scenario of why they raided him. It didn't have to do directly with an election, but it's just like anything else. If they take your documents, it's a little difficult to produce documents for the people who want them. And so that's totally out of our realm because that has to do with something that doesn't really deal with the election process. That's based on a different set of circumstances for Representative Warner.
Okay. And so unfortunately, we got just two more minutes, but you have also been active in bodily integrity issues, sacred voting rights and sacred body autonomy, you said, at a joint government operations meeting. It was an outstanding example of our elected leaders standing in the gap between citizens and unelected bureaucrats. Parents, including an RN and an MD and an attorney, drove in from around the state to register their anger that the Tennessee Department of Health is targeting the children, introducing their parental rights and intruding into parental rights and responsibilities, and refusing to disclose the mounting evidence of side effects, both short and long-term, from the COVID vaccine. Do you think any of our legislators would pass a bodily integrity amendment so that we could never go through what we went through again in the COVID era?
Well, I do know that there is another Parents' Bill of Rights coming up this time and a Patient's Bill of Rights. And I'm very hopeful that those will be passed this year. Neither of them could get out of committee last year. And I think that was a very bad move. Republicans that can't advance a bill out of committee should be ashamed of themselves.
Exactly. It's supposed to be a conservative state. Well, Mrs. Harms, thank you for your time. I really appreciate it. You're doing great work. We are nearing the end here. Please tell our listeners where they can go to find out more about you and the Tennessee voter petition. Go ahead.
Okay. The voter petition, just go to tnvoterpetition.com. It's there. It'll come up. It'll explain everything about it. You can sign it right there online. And if you're interested in learning more, come to the March 11th event. It'll be in Cool Springs, Tennessee at the Embassy Suites. And you can go to behindthecurtaintn.com to register for that. And you'll be able to interact and meet with a lot of these speakers that are going to be there.
And if you had to lay odds on this happening, what do you think?
Well, I'm hopeful. I'm more optimistic than I was last year. Let's put it that way. So awesome. Let's give it at least, it was 30-70 against us last time. So I think we've moved the ball 50-50, let's say.
I love it. A lot of prayer, right? We'll distribute this as best we can, and hopefully we'll tip the scales. So thanks again for coming on with us, and best
of
luck.
Thank you. Thank you. God bless. I don't understand how you ever did without me. I don't understand.
Welcome to the Steve and Steve segment of our show, where we cover what we just heard. Mr. Steve, what did you think of our guest, Kathy Harms?
Well, I made a lot of notes, and let me reach over here, and I just want to say that, you know, we were talking about this off air, but who is it that, Steve, who is it that doesn't want voter integrity? And I keep asking this question because it seems like you're Tennessee, you got a lot of Republicans in there, more so than Democrats, and yet everybody in there just seems to be like, oh, it's all hunky-dory. We've got all this, we're rated really high, we're doing fine, and no one seems to get the fact that the machines themselves have perilous problems with them. Why do you think that is, Steve? I don't understand it. Why do you think they can't see that there's actually problems here?
Oh, I think there's an establishment and a incumbent strain that goes through this, where they say, yay, it works for us as Republicans. We stay Republicans. It works for us as Democrats. It stays as Democrats. But what they forget is it wasn't all that long ago that Democrats actually were the majority party in Tennessee. And so once they get back into power, then they control those powers. And it's not exactly what anybody would really want. And the only people that suffer are the voters who don't agree with the established politicians who benefit from the lobbyists.
Corporate money.
The corporate money. It's always follow the money.
Short-sighted. Short-sighted, isn't it?
No. Yeah, and so I think it goes both ways for the uniparty, as they would call it. So if you're a Republican and you want to stay in power, you work with the machines that will help you stay in power. If you're a Democrat in Massachusetts, you want to stay in power, or Washington, same type of thing. That's why federalizing it is such a bad idea, because then you're going to have, instead
of monoparty,
33 governors that are Republican in the states, you're going to have absolutely one. But we can do a whole show on that another day. I want to play this for y'all. This is Paul Harvey, folks. Steve knows who he is. You may not. Once upon a time, he was the it voice in America for news. You younger listeners won't know him, but from 1951 to 2008, his programs reached as many as 24 million people per week. Paul Harvey News was carried on 1,200 radio stations, on 400 American Forces network stations, and in 300 newspapers. So by comparison, Tucker Carlson, the number one name in cable news, only gets about 2.5 million 25 to 54-year-olds per week, one-tenth, okay? Check this out.
Darkness, and I'd have a third of its real estate and four-fifths of its population, but I wouldn't be happy until I had seized the ripest apple on the tree. So I've set about however necessary to take over the United States. I'd subvert the churches first. I'd begin with a campaign of whispers. With the wisdom of a servant, I would whisper to you as I whispered to Eve. Do as you please. To the young, I would whisper that the Bible is a myth. I would convince them that man created God instead of the other way around. I would confide that what's bad is good and what's good is square. And the old, I would teach to pray after me, our Father, which art in Washington. And then I'd get organized. I'd educate authors in how to make lurid literature exciting so that anything else would appear dull and uninteresting. I'd threaten TV with dirtier movies and vice versa. I'd peddle narcotics to whom I could. I'd sell alcohol to ladies and gentlemen of distinction. I'd tranquilize the rest with pills. If I were the devil, I'd soon have families at war with themselves, churches at war with themselves, and nations at war with themselves until each in its turn was consumed. And with promises of higher ratings, I'd have mesmerizing media fanning the flames. If I were the devil, I would encourage schools to refine young intellects, but neglect to discipline emotions. Just let those run wild. Until before you knew it, you'd have to have drug-sniffing dogs and metal detectors at every schoolhouse door. Within a decade, I'd have prisons overflowing. I'd have judges promoting pornography. Soon I could evict God from the courthouse, then from the schoolhouse, and then from the houses of Congress. And in his own churches, I would substitute psychology for religion and deify science. I would lure priests and pastors into misusing boys and girls and church money. If I were the devil, I'd make the symbol of Easter an egg and the symbol of Christmas a bottle. If I were the devil, I'd take from those who have and give to those who want it until I had killed the incentive of the ambitious. What'll you bet? I couldn't get whole states to promote gambling as the way to get rich. I would caution against extremes in hard work, in patriotism, in moral conduct. I would convince the young that marriage is old-fashioned, that swinging is more fun, that what you see on TV is the way to be. And thus I could undress you in public, and I could lure you into bed with diseases for which there is no cure. In other words, if I were the devil, I'd just keep right on doing what he's doing. Paul Harvey. Good day.
Wow. I think the devil was one of those 24 million people and he took notes. What do you think?
Well, I outlined a lot of that in my book and he nailed it. And maybe I listened to that clip, Steve, and maybe that was one of the reasons why I was driven to drive, write my book and explain. But he couldn't have said it better, could he? I mean, he couldn't
listed,
have said it better.
You did a big laundry list of what happened over the last 20 years. Absolutely.
Yep.
So fast forward to today. Konstantin Kissin is a Russian-British satirist, podcaster, author, and political commentator. He made international headlines in 2018 by refusing to sign a university behavioral agreement form, which banned jokes about religion, atheism, and insisted that all humor must be respectful and kind. Let's hear him.
For 9 months, we talked about what our boy would look like, what he might do when he grows up. We looked at baby scans and videos on YouTube about what the fetus looks like at 9 months and 12 months and 20 months. And eventually he was born. And he is this cute little bundle of joy. He's cuter than about 80% of puppies. Right. Now, if you said to me that I had a choice, either my son had a serious risk of starving or dying from a preventable disease in the next year, or I could press a button and he would live. He would go to school. He would bring his first girlfriend home. He'd go to university and graduate and become a woke idiot. And then he'd get a job and get married and have children and become a man. But all I have to do is press this button, and for every day of my son's life, a giant plume of CO2 is going to get released into the atmosphere. Now, you're all very young, and most of you are not parents. Let me tell you something. There is not a parent in the world who would not smash that button so hard their hand bled. You are not going to get these people to stay poor. You're not even going to get them to not want to be richer. And so, I put it to you, ladies and gentlemen, there is only one thing we can do in this country to stop climate change, and that is to make scientific and technological breakthroughs that will create the clean energy that is not only clean, but also cheap. I want everyone to get home on time today, which is not going to happen. And the only thing that wokeness has to offer in exchange is to brainwash bright young minds like you to believe that you are victims, to believe that you have no agency, to believe that what you must do to improve the world is to complain, is to protest, is to throw soup on paintings. And we on this side of the house are not on this side of the house because we do not wish to improve the world. We sit on this side of the house because we know that the way to improve the world is to work, is to create, it is to build. And the problem with woke culture is that it's trained too many young minds like yours to forget about that. Thank you very much.
Yep.
So that was him speaking at the Oxford Union for the motion, "The House Believes Wokeness Has Gone Too Far," Konstantin Kissin. I thought that was pretty good.
I did.
You ever heard of Scott Adams?
Yeah, I used to enjoy reading his Dilbert, but I quit getting the local paper.
Mm-hmm. Well, you got to get the Mill Creek View.
Well, do you have it in the Mill Creek View?
No, but that's a local paper. We don't do cartoons.
Oh, no. Sometimes I'm talking about the local Everett Herald that became very woke, and I got out of that.
Yeah, meeting. I saw my competitor. But October 23rd, 2022, he was very adamant. This is the Dilbert cartoon illustrator and writer that we're talking about, Scott Adams. Back in October 23rd, 2022, bad days, he had this to say.
Whole different deal. But let me also tell you that I have a sort of at least a 1 year minimum optimism buffer. So my 1 year optimism buffer works like this. If it looks impossible, I still give myself a year. That's like a rule. That's like a system rule. Doesn't matter what the problem is. Doesn't matter how much it hurts. Doesn't matter how much I want it to stop, I'll give myself 1 year to just fix that thing. So, you know, don't worry, I'm going to check out early because I've got a year to fix this. But I can tell you, if I felt like this in a year, I would look to kill myself. So let me say it directly. If I feel like this next year, I'm going to look to kill myself because I don't want to live like this. Like I'm not going to do this another. I'm not going to do this 2 years. I'll do this 1 year. I'll give you 1 year with this amount of pain, and then next year, I'm not going to do 2 years. Promise you, I won't do two. Now that doesn't mean I'll kill myself. It could just mean I'll go on different drugs, right? But you know, legal, illegal, whatever I have to do. Heroin, I would definitely do heroin. End it now. Somebody's suggesting that I kill myself right away. Thank you.
So I probably missed a point there, but what was the very beginning part of that, Steve? I apologize. The thing glitched over to a different channel.
Because it's actually setting up what went viral from him this weekend. So he is apparently, and I didn't know this, I had to go back and look, all messed up after multiple clot shot injections and says he's close to killing himself. He's now in constant physical pain. Has weird rashes, can't exercise, and can barely even walk upstairs after his multiple injections of government health juice. In addition, he's in psychic pain. He wrote on Twitter, "I had COVID February 21, so a year and a half before that. Luckily, not hospitalized. Only way to describe is run over by a train, then placed under a hovercraft for 10 days. Wouldn't wish upon anyone. First Moderna shot, nothing. Second, felt kind of shitty for 1 day. No comparison. Get the vaccine, please." Okay. We heard a lot I got super sick. It was awful, but get the vaccine, please. I didn't die. He says earlier in that video, he submitted to just be permitted to fly to Greece. That's why he got the shot. And now he's been suffering for all of these. We don't know if it's the same. Could it be a stroke of bad luck? Who knows, Job. But he got the shot. We know that. He said he got sick from it, but wants us to get it now. Adam suffers a series of unfortunate setbacks in recent years, including 2018, death of his stepson from a fentanyl overdose, divorce from his wife, losing a Dilbert TV show for his being white, believe it or not, a three-year battle with spasmodic dysphonia, preventing him from speaking until having laryngeal surgery, and cancellation of his Dilbert comic in 2022 by a chain of 77 newspapers for apparently political reasons.
Wow.
Let's play clip number 4 now. This is what he said that got him all the press recently.
Here's what's going to happen. I'm going to tell you that the anti-vaxxers appear to be right. Somebody who did not get vaccinated, got a little Omicron, or maybe even a worse one, but recovered. Now you've got natural immunity, and you have no vaccination in you. Can we all agree that that was the winning path? The smartest, happiest people are the ones who didn't get the vaccination and are still alive. I want to make sure that I'm not leaving any wiggle room for myself. Have I? Have I said as clearly as possible they're the happy ones right now? And have a reason to be, completely. Right. Having said as clearly as possible that the anti-vax people seem to be the winners, I want you to hear that clearly. The anti-vax people appear to be the winners. The anti-vaxxers clearly are the winners at this point, and I think it'll probably stay that way. And I don't want to put any shade on that whatsoever. They came out the best. They have the winning position. The unvaccinated have a current advantage because they feel better. The thing they're not worrying about is what I have to worry about, which is, I wonder if that vaccination 5 years from now, because really the anti-vaxxers, I think, were really just distrustful of big companies and big government. That's never wrong. It's never wrong to distrust government. It's never wrong to distrust big companies, right? So if you just took the position, let's just distrust everything the government did, well, you won. You won. You won completely. I did not end up in the right place. Agree? You would all agree with that, right? I did not end up in the right place. The right place would be natural immunity, no vaccination. You should take victory, and I should take defeat. We can agree on that, right? That my position is now the weakest, and your position has gone from the weakest to the strongest, and that we can just say that's true. The people who didn't get vaxxed are absolutely in the winning position. You win.
Reminds me of the story of Nebuchadnezzar in the book of Daniel. Do you know that story?
Yeah, tell it in 10 seconds.
Basically, he was this high and mighty king. He wanted everything, and God basically lowered him to the point where he was eating grass in a field like a wild animal. And he finally came about, he repented, and he said, "Glory be to the God of Daniel and all high men." He was brought low to be brought into right understanding of what was true.
Yeah, and I pray he gets well soon. I
Me
take
too.
No victory lap. I don't think
no.
It's winning, as he said. To
no,
have
not
friends
at all.
And loved ones sick and dying. But my point is, the tide is turning, Steve. People are waking up. This is what it looks like when there is a cultural shift. Adams has 844,000 followers, and that clip trended all weekend. If he can change his mind, he was very pro-vaccine for the last 2 years. Maybe the folks at the FDA and CDC can too. We live in hope.
I pray every day.
Sadly,
for that.
A lot of friends and family are going to go through much pain to find out. Sucks to be lied to.
Yep.
Stay tuned for my thought of the week. Welcome to my thought of the week. But before I share, I want to remind everyone to subscribe to Mill Creek View Podcast. Just go to Rumble or Google app and hit the subscribe button and follow us. And thank you for doing it. The whole framework of the presidency is getting out of hand. It's come to the point where you almost can't run unless you can cause people to salivate and whip on each other's with big sticks. You almost have to be a rock star to get the kind of fever you need to survive in American politics. Hunter S. Thompson, Fear and Loathing of the Campaign Trail, 1972. For nearly 4 years, you've had an administration which, instead of twirling its thumbs, has rolled up its sleeves. We will keep our sleeves rolled up. We had to struggle with the old enemies of peace, business and financial monopoly, speculation, reckless banking, class antagonism, sectionalism, war profiteering. They had begun to consider the government of the United States as a mere appendage to their own affairs. We know now that the government by organized money is just as dangerous as government by organized mob. Franklin D. Roosevelt. I think we are back in the days of old. People never lie so much as after a hunt, during a war, or before an election. Otto von Bismarck. Bismarck viewed the growing international socialist movement as the nonviolent German Social Democratic Party, SDP, in particular with alarm, since the SDP's existence was protected by the terms of the German Constitution. Bismarck found ways to weaken it, short of an outright ban. In 1878, he instituted the first of a series of repressive anti-socialist laws, forbidding socialist organizations and meetings, outlawing trade unions, closing newspapers, and banning the circulation of socialist literatures. Steve, do you know what became of the SDP?
No.
Became the Nazis. That's it for this episode. Really hope you like it. Thank you, Kathy Harms, for looking after our election integrity and making Tennessee better than Heritage.org says we are, the following the money for us. Until next time, this is your host, Steve Abramowitz, editor-in-chief of the Mill Creek View newspaper. Peace in our time.
At the county fair, they were looking for America behind every turn, flying the very colors that so many love to burn. I'll cruise the countryside with my dad and my brother, row after row of cotton and corn, moving through this place just like rolling thunder.
Any views or opinions represented on the podcast are personal and belong solely to the creator and do not represent those of people, institutions, or organizations that the creator may or may not be associated with in a professional or personal capacity unless explicitly stated.